Representative Rosenthal moves the minutes of March 26th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I'd like to move the minutes from April 9th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Minutes are approved. Okay, great. First, Representative Rosenthal.
Madam Chair, thank you. On the minute, I would like to amend the minutes of meeting on the 22nd. Representative Mae Quaid was marked as absent. She told me she was going to be in another committee and stop in and say hi, made sure I see her. I did, and it's totally my fault that she was marked absent. So I would move that she be marked as present.
Okay, so Representative Rosenthal moves that Erin Mae Quaid, Representative Mae Quaid, would be marked present on March 22nd. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you. Wonderful. So we have the 4th Judicial District Veterans Court up today. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Carolina Lamas. I'm a judge in Hennepin County. Been a judge there for about a little over 4 years and have been the presiding judge in Veterans Court for the last year and a half. Thank you, Chairwoman O'Neill, representatives, for having us here to talk about Veterans Courts. So I think most of you are familiar with treatment courts, but just a little refresher for those of you that are not. Treatment courts started over 20 years ago, starting with drug courts. The idea behind treatment courts is to address the underlying issue that's bringing people into the criminal justice system and trying to address that issue, resolve that issue, so that people can be productive members of society and not be going back and forth into the criminal justice system. Veterans Court, since that time there's been a lot of research and a lot of nationwide best practices established that treatment courts are always working on being in compliance with and improving the courts based on the new research as it's coming out. Veterans Court stems from that treatment court model, and it's got its own unique characteristics and unique players at the table. In addition to the normal players in a treatment court, which would be the probation officer, the judge, the prosecutor, and the defense attorney, veterans treatment courts specifically also have veterans benefits at the table, the VJO, which is a social worker from the VA. DEED is at the table, the representative of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Change STEP, which is a domestic abuse program specifically through DAP, the Domestic Abuse Project, and the VSO, the Veterans Service Office. So they are all represented at the table of further helping the veterans participants to get service-connected, get back on the right track, and really work with their treatment and therapy and needs through the VA. Hennepin County had the first Veterans Court in Minnesota. It started in July of 2010. Since that time, Hennepin County's Veterans Court has served over 400 veterans. Currently, there are several Veterans Courts in Minnesota, including in Carver County, Hennepin County, Ramsey County, I believe Representative Fisher, you're from there, and Representative Lesh as well. South St. Louis County has been the newest officially approved Veterans Court in Minnesota. There is the Anoka County Veterans Court. Clay and Becker counties have a Veterans Court. And finally, the 5th Judicial District, which is Southwest Minnesota. I want to talk a little bit about the successes of the Veterans Court. So we're lucky in Hennepin County. We have an excellent research division that was able to do a very comprehensive study that analyzed not only the time of that participants spent in Veterans Court, but also a two-year look-back period to be able to look at what recidivism was like after program completion. This study was completed a little over a year ago, and really got some strong data for us. And I'm going to go over some of the statistics that's in the sheet that looks like this. I want to highlight specifically the 88% of graduates do not recidivate within 2 years of graduation. The 2 years is because that was the two-year look-back period in this study. 92% of participants are connected to VA services at program exit. And we have seen people go through the program that come in without any service connection whatsoever, or really availing themselves of service connection that they could have and really getting that connection and how beneficial that has been for people's lives. And very important, I want to highlight at the bottom, the 76% graduation rate. The reason the graduation rate is so important is because the successes that we see afterwards are really going to be of the graduates of the program. So you're seeing, for example, the 88% of graduates without any recidivism. There's also a study that Hennepin County research team is doing right now, taking a look at the financial investment and the return on the investment financially. And what they're seeing is that regardless of whether somebody graduates, of course, the investment up front is higher. All the court time, the probation officer's time, and everything that goes into having multiple reviews in a very intensive probation. But the costs after the initial costs are a lot lower for those people that graduate. So really there's a huge financial return on investment for those that graduate. So that 76% graduation rate is a really good one to have. So I'd like to invite all of you to attend a Veterans Court if you can. In Hennepin County, we have Veterans Court every Monday. 8:30 to 9:30 is the staffing. 9:30 to whatever court is over is the actual court reviews. If you can make it to Veterans Court, I would really encourage you to come to the 8:30 to 9:30 staffing. That's where a lot of the work is done. And I'd like to thank Representative Detmer, who I believe is walking in, Rosenthal, and O'Neill for your previous visits. I'm going to turn it over now to Stephen Appen. He's a graduate of the Ramsey County Veterans Court, and I just had the opportunity to meet him today. I had presented previously at the corresponding committee in the Senate and had Tony Miller with me, who had graduated from the Hennepin County Veterans Court program, and his presentation was extremely powerful, so if you have opportunity to watch it, I would encourage you to do so. He's in school, and unfortunately, with the last-minute scheduling that conflicted with his schedule, but I'm really excited to hear what Mr. Penn has to say about his experience in Ramsey County, so I'll turn it over to him.
Thank you. My name is Stephen Penn. I would like to thank everyone in here for inviting me to come speak with you. I've recently graduated, actually probably about 2 years ago, from Ramsey County Veterans Court. And now I'm a mentor in Ramsey County's for Ramsey County Veterans Court. It's fun for me to be able to give back to the veterans to help them out, whatever barriers that are there, to go ahead and speak with their probation officers and let them know that this is something that, you know, could help them. You know, from myself, I have a huge mental health issue and problems because I was in 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines. And if you guys have never heard of them, we've actually been in the New York Times for the hardest hit battalion in 2008. We were the first Marines back into southern Afghanistan. And with 1,300 Marines, our AO, our area of operations, was about the size of Vermont. In total of killed in action, we had 22 Marines. One of them was one of my best friends, and it was so bad, we ran out of body bags and had to put him in a sleeping bag. The last time I seen him was putting his body onto the bird, the helicopter, to send him back home to his wife and his three kids. Now, an epidemic that we have now is veteran suicides. From our battalion just itself, actually as of this past Thursday, we had another veteran from our battalion that committed suicide. That is now number 36. That is more suicides than we have ever had in our battalion from our first deployment to Iraq and our first deployment into Afghanistan. Do I know what, you know, we can do to help that? I don't. All I know is that with our peer support, that's something that we can do. It's happened to me before where I become numb and I don't know what to do and I have suicidal ideations. When I feel that coming on, the first thing I do is call my best friend. You know, he may be in California, but I call him and we're always stick together for each other and, you know, we make the best out of everything we can. With Veterans Treatment Court, I really appreciate that it was there because why I was in there because I had a flashback. It was a horrible flashback. I was driving and I stopped the car because this was actually the time in, I want to say 2015 or 16, when the news reporter had his head cut off on TV. Now, if you guys remember that time, that's when I had my flashback. And I stopped the car along the way because I thought they were terrorists, tried to pull them out. I actually seen a cop driving down the road and I flagged them down because that's exactly what I said there. That car has some terrorists. Please help. Lo and behold, I just told them exactly what happened. They've seen my license plates and they found me some help. And I really, really do appreciate that being in Veterans Court because it helped me turn around and I look at everything differently. And now I'm on the other side of the court system and I really do appreciate that. And with everybody here, I'm pretty sure the Veterans Court had a lot to do with you guys because you allowed it to happen. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Penn. Is there any questions of the testimony today? Yes. Representative Lash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Penn, so was that the incident you described? Was that the incident that of how you found yourself charged in Veterans Court?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that's what I was wondering. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. And, you know, I know I didn't work with it directly in my office. I was with the St. Paul City Attorney's Office. I did work with then public defender Ms. Lamas. And I don't know if I ever congratulated you for being a judge, but congratulations.
Thank you.
We're all proud of you over in Ramsey County. But I know a lot of folks worked on that, and I want to thank you, first of all, for going through it and participating, but then also being willing to come up here and tell us all about it, because this is really the only way most of us ever find out about it is from your story. So thank you for your service. Thanks for doing that, but then continuing to go through that for all of us, okay? We know it's hard. But we continue to appreciate the effort that you have to put in, even though you're not in anymore. You have to put that effort in, and it's still for us. Okay, so thank you.
I appreciate your support.
And members, you know, personally, I've sat in on a Veterans Court. I actually saw a graduation, and if you haven't done it, you need to get a hold of your county, or especially Ramsey or Hennepin. Washington County has one, too. I think there's nine counties that have veterans, some type of veterans courts. They're not all the same, but I really encourage you to make contacts with your county and find out when they meet. And I was able to actually sit in on prior to the court session and listen to the judge and also the lawyers and talk about each case, and then you actually go to the court and watch the veteran come walking up to the judge, standing there at a parade rest or whatever the judge wants, and they have communications going on back and forth. And I think it's a good thing for you to get in and visit and see what goes on in our veterans courts. And I hope that we can expand that to other counties. Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to say the same thing that I also got to experience Veterans Court, and I've been to Hennepin County Specialty Court 7 times, 3 times to Ramsey County, and then out to the district courts a little bit. But I used to do some work in locked psychiatric hospitals, and we would have big team meetings, and we would have, you know, every aspect of the person would be considered. And that's what's so unique about specialty courts is you're looking at, you know, their housing, their job, their their mental status, you know, how are they doing, and are they having PTSD? And it's just an all-encompassing picture of that person, and you've got support from that whole team. And I think the team spends as much time before they go to court than as they do in court. Mm-hmm. So they're discussing every single person on the Veterans Court or any of the specialty courts. But it's so powerful, and there's such a fantastic relationship between the judge and all the participants. And I want to thank you too for, you know, stepping up, because I know it's still something that you do voluntarily, that you choose the Veterans Court to do. So at least that's the court that I've been to. So it's, you know, it's something obviously that's a passion of yours and that's in your heart, because there's that relationship that you have with those that come in is really what makes the difference. And, you know, taking a look at, you know, did you go to your appointments? Did you, you know, follow through with this job interview? And, you know, there's all this accountability to kind of help someone get to a better place in their life. So, if you haven't been to a Veterans Court, it's really powerful. Any of the specialty courts are really powerful, but particularly the Veterans Court.
Yeah. Any other questions for Judge Lamas? And Judge Lamas, again, thank you. And if you were to leave us with one thing as a committee here and legislators, what would you really want us to remember?
Well, thank you, and thank you for your visit. We actually just had a presentation after Veterans Court today, about how we were perceived by the participants. There was another research study that our research team did, and one thing that really struck me is a lot of the participants made comments that they on a scale of 9, it was 8.5 something. That they would recommend Veterans Court to a friend or family member that was having similar problems. And what really struck me is the wish that there was more Veterans Courts around the state, and that it wasn't just available in a few select counties. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and Judge Lamas, is there a graduation coming up shortly, or is it off in the future?
We graduate our participants as they happen. We don't have a big graduation ceremony the way the drug court does. So on any given Monday where you come to observe, we could have one or two graduations. And then also we'll have, we also do 90-day post-graduation reviews. So this morning we were fortunate to have one graduation and two graduation reviews.
Okay. So, well, thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else? Again, thank you for coming in so much. Okay, the first bill on the agenda that we have today is House File 4225, and Representative Hugh, please come to the table, and we will hear your bill. Okay, thank you. And I will move House File 4225 before the committee, and that will be laid over. And Representative Pugh, your bill is before us. And please tell us about your bill and introduce your testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Thank you for granting us the informational hearing today on House File 4225, a bill that would make grants available to nonprofit entities whose mission is to serve veterans for their use in recognizing our state's Korean War veterans in a similar, special manner to that in which we honored our World War II veterans by presenting a medallion on red, white, and blue grosgrain ribbon to each, beginning with those who were in attendance at the dedication ceremony of their World War II memorial on the Minnesota State Capitol grounds in June of 2007. And I do believe that we have information in your packets, and the first color picture in your packets shows the medals. So I'm State Representative Cindy Pugh, House District 33B, proudly serving Chanhassen and 9 of the 16 cities surrounding Lake Minnetonka. My vision for this initiative is that the veterans organizations work in collaboration with the stakeholders in the Department of Veterans Affairs and other interested partners, and they would prepare to begin to do so on the Korean Armistice Day, July 27th next year in 2019. So that's my vision. Lots and lots of details that would need to be orchestrated prior to then. So I greatly appreciate the opportunity that you've granted me today, more than anything, to lift up and to give much-deserved visibility and a show of gratitude to our almost 9,500 brave Minnesotans who served during this conflict, often termed the Forgotten War, which was waged between the summers of 1950 and 1953. In my opinion, it's high time that we do so. In many ways, even though they served just a few years after our servicemen and women of World War II, our Korean War veterans have remained somewhat in the shadow of the greatest generation. And speaking about the greatest generation, I'm pleased to have here today one of my constituents, a World War II combat infantryman, Fremont Gruss of Deep Haven. Through his actions and words, he has deepened my appreciation for those who have served and for the tremendous sacrifices made by those who have fought for and defended our precious freedoms. Fremont was in attendance at the World War II Veterans Commemoration and received his medallion, which he's wearing today. And so I've asked him to share just a few words. I have a feeling he could spend a lot of time, but we have a limited amount of time for all of us. But I've asked him to share just a few words about what that medallion has meant to him. And if he wants to say a few other things, he's welcome to do so.
Welcome, Mr. Patton. Would you,
Mr. Fremont Gruss.
Mr. Gruss, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Fremont Gruss. I live in Deep Haven, Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you so very much for an opportunity to speak to you folks today. I'd like to urge you to do your very, very best to honor the wonderful people of the war that we served with also, the Korean War. It was so proud to be in Washington, and Washington was very generous. They gave us this badge that those in attendance, the national dedication. Minnesota, I think, was much more generous. They gave us a beautiful medallion, and we all appreciated the recognition so very much. And I ask each of you today, please, do your very, very best to honor those younger vets from Korea that should be recognized and be honored. I'm going to be 94 years old this coming month, and I am patient. But do your very best, folks, to have the influence to get that in, because I want to be in attendance when it's put together. Very briefly, I left Fort Snelling in the summer of 1943, and half of my buddies lost their lives in New Guinea that I trained with. Three of us qualified for aviation cadets. We were 2 weeks away from flying. Order came down and said, if you've been in the ground forces, you're going back. I ended up in the 97th Infantry Division, and I'd like to very briefly, this is my diary that I carried going to war and during the war, and I'd like to read very briefly. A battalion of men is 1,000 in World War II. And I've written here, 7-8, April, 1st Battalion hit hard. Casualties pass to rear at Hanglar. When we crossed the Sieg River, I saw a lot of young guys laying very still on the banks near the bank of Sieg River. And I know that they gave their all for you and for me. And remembrance of those buddies and appreciation for what Cindy's doing. Please, folks, use your influence the best you can to honor our veterans from Korea. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir, and for your service. I know my father will be 95, May 27th. He has also a medal that he's very thankful that he was able to receive. And your generation is a great generation. We all know that.
Wish you my best regards.
Yes, I will. Still lives in his home. And
what unit was he in, do you recall?
He was a mechanic. And he tells the story when he first learned how to take trucks apart. Well, they brought him into a big area, and the sergeant comes up and says, okay, take it all apart. Well, they took it all apart, and they had to put it all together, but they had a lot of parts left over. So you learn as you go. But, again,
give him my best regards.
Yes, I will. And for the committee here, we should know that back in 2008, we passed a piece of legislation that honored the Korean War, just like we did the Vietnam War Day. We have a Korean War Day in Minnesota, and it's July 27th of each year is the Korean War Day in Minnesota. And it hasn't taken off like the Vietnam War Day has, but maybe this will kind of give it a send-off. Yes, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to ask you, my wife's grandfather ran what he claimed was the longest-running floating crafts game in New Guinea as a quartermaster. Did you ever play floating crafts with some grizzled-looking guy who was a quartermaster in New Guinea?
He was in Europe.
You're in Europe. Okay, I'm sorry. You talked about New Guinea. My bad. Well, thank you very much for all of your service and your work. And it's, well, it's an honor to have you here, sir. Thank you.
And Representative Hugh, do you have another testimony?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have one other testifier who will introduce another, and I will have him introduce himself for the record.
Okay. Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Is this on? Can you hear me?
Yes, it is.
My name is Don Patton. I am the founder of the Dr. Harold C. Deutsch World War II History Roundtable. We started our programs in 1987. We're just finishing our 31st year. We average 300 people at every meeting, even in snowstorms. And, again, we're finishing our 31st year. We will actually be losing our place of meeting when the Fort Snelling restoration goes on. So yeah. I'm trying to find another venue for that. We bring in top-notch historians and always have a panel of veterans, and Fremont has been on the one when we did the Battle of the Ruhr. Personally, I wanted to just give some gratitude. I see Don Kerr in the audience. I was awarded the Superior Volunteer Service Award by General Nash, which Don was involved in. And if you remember, Bob, you presented me the Minnesota Voices Legacy in 2016 for the work of our roundtable for the Minnesota Humanities Center. One of the other things that we did of significance is we were the advocate for the naming of Interstate 35 from Duluth to the Iowa border as the 34th Division Red Bull Division Highway. So we have tried to be supportive of a lot of things. During the 2007 World War II dedication, I had two responsibilities. One is to get Chuck Lindbergh to the event. He was the last living flag raiser at Iwo Jima. And also Mike Kalalillo from Duluth, who was the last living Medal of Honor winner. And I say that because the World War II recognition lasted too long, and this recognition of the Korean War has lasted too long. Cindy mentioned that Korea has been named the Forgotten War, which it probably has. But if anybody reads the newspaper today, you know that Korea and the events of Korea are almost always on the front page. So it is something that needs to be dealt with. The veterans are in their late 80s. Can't wait. And I wanted to just bring to your attention a couple here. Harry Burke was in the Chosin Reservoir Defense this is a book that was written on a company that did heroic things in the Korean War. Behind him is Pat Finn, who is on the national board of the Chosin Reservoir Veterans Association. And behind him is Arthur Gruenberger, Eden Prairie. I had Representative Loon come down and meet him. He was captured at Corregidor in World War II, was a prisoner of the Japanese for 3.5 years in a slave labor camp. He then, can I say hard-headed Marine, stayed in and again was in Fox Company in the Chosin Reservoir Defense. The reason that was so important was because they held positions as the Chinese came down across the Yalu River that enabled thousands of other Americans to escape. So this is a much needed recognition of the gentleman. Harry, would you like to say something?
Yes.
Welcome, Mr. Burke.
Happy to
please introduce yourself for the record, Mr. Burke.
Yes, I am Harry L. Burke. I was in service in Fox Company, 2nd Battalion, 7th Marines in Korea. I first entered Korea at the Incheon Landing. We were the reserve regiment, but we saw action in the Seoul fighting. We took casualties around Seoul. That was didn't last but a few weeks, but then we were put on LSTs and went around to the east side of Korea, North Korea, and landed at Wonsan. Then we went up north, and MacArthur wanted us to hurry up and go fast up to the Yellow River, and the war would be over. Well, that was kind of a victorious. It wasn't really the way it went. That test when the Chinese entered the war. Our company was, we were, well, of course, then it was the 10th of November, the weather changed dramatically to below zero of the winds, and it stayed that way the rest of the 3 more weeks of that. But we were, our Fox Company was assigned a very important position on the road called Toktan Pass. We were there for 5.5 days. The main headquarters was at a little town called Hagaruri. Now that was, we had been there for a few weeks. Now nothing, but then again, we knew there were Chinese around. We were sending out patrols each day, trying to find them. But they were hiding, they were staying away from us. They had attacked us on the November 2nd and 3rd, so we knew we took casualties then, and so we knew they were there. But MacArthur wanted us to go up to the Yellow River and the war would be over. Well, it was not the way it happened. But so the 7 miles farther south, farther north, the first, you know, the fifth and the first Marines were up there. We were and part of the seventh as well, also there. But we were 7 miles halfway between Udamni and Hagaruri to guard this and to secure this very important pass. So the Chinese wanted, there's only one road that goes all the way up there, and so they knew, the Chinese knew we'd be on near the road. But we held our position for 5 days. The attack, each night they were always attacking us at night, and then they would snipe at us during the day. The very first night we had about 19 men killed and 50-60 wounded. And then, but we didn't have the second night, we didn't, we weren't as many casualties. We were more prepared for them. We were, well, they, their idea was to surprise us, which they did.
Harry, we're going to have to stop at that point. But you know what we always say at our round table, if you want to know the full story, read the book. again, Harry and Arthur were in Fox Company together, and you know, this is not just Marines. There's Air Force, there's Army, and the overall Marine Veterans Association. Harry and Arthur and Pat are part of the chosen. On short notice, that's all we could pull together for this testimony. We thank you for listening.
And Mr. Patton, if you could let us know the meeting schedules and let my legislative assistant know when they. There we go. We could. I'm also part of the MAG Military Action Group. We could send out those meeting dates to.
We only got one left for the year.
Okay.
It's actually on the
Please go to the microphone, please, Mr. Patton.
We only have one program left in our 31st year, and it's on the Marshall Plan. So
okay.
But we have the noted historian coming in from New York to speak on that, and we're going to have four persons that were actually in Europe in that post-war period to talk about the hardships that they had of no food, no water, and shelter.
And Mr. Patton, do you have is there a website?
There is.
Okay.
I have some cards.
But we can get that out. We can get that out to not only the committee, but also the military action group. So, any other questions? Well, thank you so much for Representative Pugh for coming for this informational hearing.
Proud to be here.
Anybody else would like to testify? Yes, we have the department would like to come down.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Johnson, would you introduce yourself for the record?
Chair Detmer, members of the committee, my name is Ben Johnson. I'm the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. I have some prepared comments, but I'll preface them by saying thank you for your service. Thank you very much for attending today. In no way do these comments reflect an opinion about the content of this bill, simply about the process and some of the policy associated with it. But I want to start from that position before I go forward.
And Mr. Johnson, we know where your heart is, okay?
House File 4225 seeks to appropriate an unspecified amount of money from the Support Our Troops account to pay for the design, production, and distribution of these commemorative Korean War ribbon and medallion. MDVA is in full support of recognizing the service of Minnesota's Korean War era veterans, but are opposed to legislation which statutorily earmarks SOT funds. SOT account funds are used by MDVA to grant as grants to veteran service organizations, outreach to underserved veterans, providing services and programs for veterans and their families, transfer to the vehicle services account for Gold Star license plates, competitive grants, which is the key to my testimony, of up to $100,000 to any organization approved by MDVA and the commissioner for the purpose of supporting and improving the lives of veterans and their families, grants to eligible foundations, and our agency's uncompensated burial costs for eligible dependents whom the commissioner grants a no-fee or reduced-fee burial in our state veteran cemeteries. MDVA's current SOT grants process, competitive grants process, enjoys the support and participation of leading members of the Minnesota veterans community, Minnesota chapters of congressionally chartered veteran service organizations, community leaders, and other subject matter experts on existing federal, state, local, and nonprofit programs, services, and benefits available to veterans. This group reviews proposals and vets organizations who are applying for these competitive grants. The vetting evaluates, among other things, the organization's finances, legal standing, and their appropriate use of grant dollars for Minnesota veterans as defined by Minnesota Statute 197.447. That is the statute that lays out the definition of what a veteran is in the state of Minnesota. This vetting is also critical in making determinations about the actual needs within the community and reduces the likelihood of duplicating services. policy of legislatively directing appropriations outside the established SOT competitive grants process weakens the vetting process. Furthermore, direct appropriation sets a disturbing precedent by which organizations who are unsuccessful in applying through the existing competitive grants process or who are unwilling or unable to apply are encouraged then to circumvent that process by simply requesting that a legislature or the legislature appropriate funds directly from the account. This eliminates or in some cases ignores the input about the account's usage from the veterans community, diminishes the value of our robust application vetting and evaluation decision making. And I would like to note that this account is almost entirely financed by donations from the veterans community with the purchase of Support Our Troops license plates. The purpose of the funding is services serves to support creative or novel veteran support programs that the community that is purchasing these license plates chooses. Legislating recipients, in many ways, subverts the original purpose of the SOT program, and our concern is that it could result in diminished participation by those in the community who support the original goals, but not those that are legislatively directed. Representative Pugh has been an outstanding supporter of veterans programming and has worked hard with us to address some of these concerns. We've provided some information about how we could move forward in supporting this noble goal of recognizing our Korean War era veterans. I understand that this is an informational hearing, but wanted to take the opportunity that was extended by you, Chair, to describe the SOT process and why we're concerned with a legislatively directed appropriation from that fund for something not just with the Korean War medallions, but we've had other legislation introduced which would direct money from the SOT fund. We vehemently oppose that. We think that there's a good process in place. We have a current competitive grant process is open through the 23rd of April. There are organizations currently developing grants, and we'll be submitting them. We also will have another grant process open later this year. We generally do two per year, so there are opportunities to develop grants for consideration for these funds. I'd also like to highlight that we've provided a fiscal year 2017 Support Our Troops account report. Make it available to the members of the community. It's an annual report submitted in January to the committees with jurisdiction over veterans. It highlights some of the programs that are supported through the SOT program.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you, Mr. Johnson. And I know that I know where you're at, and I know that Representative Pugh is doing what she thinks is right, too. And could you share with the committee, Mr. Johnson, when we handed out the medallions to the World War II veterans, how was that funded?
Chair Detmer, members of the committee, the World War II medallions were funded at, in concert with the development of the World War II memorial on the Capitol grounds. This was not separate appropriation for medallions, and the recipients of that initial round of medallions were those who RSVP'd to attend the commemorative ribbon cutting of that event. Following that event, people returned to their communities and friends and neighbors who also served or had parents who served in World War II, but then followed up with NDVA. And over about the following 5 or 6 years, we received repeated requests for, hey, my family didn't receive a medallion, a World War II medallion. My father fought or died. My mother served overseas in the Nurse Corps. And it resulted in two more runs of medallions being produced, and finally the company that produced them suggested to us that they would no longer make any more because it had become something of a challenge to continue trying to follow up with all of the requests. So,
Mr. Johnson, do you have any idea what that cost for all the medallions that we handed out?
I don't have the exact figure. One of the estimates that we ran when we looked at Representative Pugh's bill here was about $30 a medallion, but that doesn't take into account. That was production for the actual medallion. It doesn't take into account the design, outreach, distribution, so on.
Okay. And maybe Mr. Patton and also the department could get together along with Representative Pugh and figure out a route that we want to go, so maybe when we come upon next session, we can have a bill that we can go forward with, and and maybe you could have a set up a meeting with the groups to see what type of funding we can come up with. Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that's exactly what my intent is. As you know, my intent today was just to heighten visibility of this group that has been somewhat forgotten, and I think it just presents a tremendous opportunity to look for a way to recognize our Korean War veterans just as the state of Minnesota did for its World War II veterans. And we have a lot of work to do, a lot of logistical issues. I personally have more questions than I have answers. I greatly appreciate the ongoing relationship that I have with Mr. Johnson, and he's always been incredibly responsive, including his really direct, you know, forthcoming remarks today about the challenges before us. So where there's a will, there's a way, and I'm going to look for a way to move forward by identifying other stakeholders, several of whom I can already think of, who I do believe would want to make an investment in doing something such as this for our Korean War veterans. Okay. So I'll just leave it at that. I'm just so grateful for your and the committee's time today.
Okay. And Mr. Patton? We do have to move on here.
I'm just going to make one quick comment. We're here advocating for the Korean War veterans, but I hope that someone will keep in the back of the drawer. We need to do this for the Vietnam veterans on coming here in the next few years. As I plan programs for my World War II veterans, it's becoming very, very slim, and it's amazing for me to see how many death notices I see for the Vietnam veterans, so they're passing too quickly here. So,
and just a reminder, everybody, July 27th is the Korean War Day here in Minnesota, and so let's keep that in mind. And I'd like to thank everybody that came here for this hearing, informational hearing. Thank you again for your service. And we're going to move on to the next bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Detmer and committee members.
And the next bill on the agenda is House File 4362. This is my bill, and I've asked Representative Rosenthal to come over and
Detmer, would you like to move your bill before the committee and have it re-referred to the State Government Finance Committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would like to move 4362.
Chair Detmer, your bill is before us. Please tell us about your bill.
Well, I'm going to keep my comments short because we've got three or four people here that would like to address the committee. But on a personal note, we're talking about the buildings in the Fort Snelling area that have been sitting there and boarded up for many years. And in fact, I could might be dating myself, but I've taken classes in some of those buildings and over the years. And what this bill will do, it'll bring and renovate these buildings. And I would like to turn it over to my testifiers.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Owen Metz. I'm a partner at Dominium. We're an affordable housing owner, operator, and developer based here in Minnesota. We operate in about 23 states, but this is our backyard, and we own and manage about 7,000 apartments across our state. I don't have the heartfelt testimony of some of the other earlier testifiers, so I'll try to keep short and more business. The upper post, as Representative Bettmer alluded to, is 26 vacant buildings that primarily been vacant for 20 to 30 years or more. They are owned by the state of Minnesota through the Department of Natural Resources since 1971, when they were federal surplus lands and provided to our state. We've already lost one of the buildings that collapsed, I want to say 10-plus years ago, and the rest have kind of been mothballed and waiting for help. And there's an opportunity now in the financing world to do affordable housing out there, and we are proposing to do it with a veteran's preference, which is new for our organization, something we haven't done, but has been done around the country in other instances. A recent one, my uncle-in-law was quoted in a paper in Madison. They did a veteran's preference affordable housing community there. And so there's different areas to draw from that we're excited about trying to do here. The problem we've run into is getting an allocation of federal tax-exempt bonds, very different than GO bonds. These are resources our state gets from the federal government, and we've been unsuccessful in getting an allocation of those to allow us to move forward on the pre-development work, which will total between $4 and $5 million of architectural, legal, et cetera, to get through the state and federal historic process. And we're kind of running out of time. This is really our last ditch effort to try to redevelop the upper post, leveraging some federal resources that come to our state. I say that because the state historic tax credit, which would be one of the tools we're proposing to use, expires in 2021. And it'll take us a couple years to get to a closing. So we're really kind of at a crossroads here in trying to move this forward. We've been working with the governor's administration, the governor's office, the DNR, Minnesota Housing, Management and Budget, Departments of Veterans Affairs, trying to come up with a solution for this. And we're really, this is what we're left with, is coming to the legislature to effectively reserve some of the federal bonds we get for the development, so that when we get to an ultimate closing, we know that we can use the bonds. And why that is important is because of the low-income housing tax credit that comes with that. So it really leverages and brings in significant private investment to Minnesota if used in this way. And, it's something that is expensive. It's hard to save these buildings, been vacant for a while. It's only going to get more expensive, though, and we can do this in a public-private way that allows our organization, who has a lot of experience in this, to do it. And so I'll be available for questions. I've got a lot of information I've provided. Happy to answer questions now or after other testimony. We'll be sticking around. So I really appreciate your time and consideration for this important endeavor. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Detmer,
everybody should have a packet. Everybody should have a packet. And also there's letters from in support from Governor Dayton, also from Congress, support from Congress, and also from Commissioner Shelato is support. And also Myron Franz, Commissioner, Myron Franz, and also Peter McLaughlin, Hennepin County Commissioner. So there's letters of support there that you can take a look at when you get a time to do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a quick question for Mr. Metz. I've used historic tax credits before and new markets, and I know how difficult it is to put together a project like this, so I applaud you for doing it, and I would hope that we could extend our historic credits further.
And we have more testifiers. We have Mr. Herman. I'll just go right in the order that we have here, unless there's a different order. Okay, go ahead. We got Mr. Parker.
Welcome to the committee. Would you say your name and for the record?
Thank you. My name is Keith Parker. I'm the Central Region Director for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee members for the opportunity to speak with you today related to the upper post. The DNR, I would like to make clear, is not necessarily here to speak directly to this bill, but we are here to really advocate very strongly for Dominium as an organization and the proposal that they have brought forward through an RFP process to restore and reuse the 26 buildings at the Upper Post. I've been with the DNR. This is my eighth year. I serve at the pleasure of Commissioner Landwehr. Nice to see you today, Representative Detmer. And this is the best proposal that we have ever seen to restore and reuse the buildings. It can be difficult, I think, for people to, you know, see the vision when you see, you know, broken down buildings that are boarded up. It's hard to envision a vibrant community. But if you think about the Upper Post historically, it was a vibrant community. There has been many historical uses over the years, and what we're really seeking to do is work with Dominium to create affordable housing and a vibrant community again at the Upper Post. As you can probably see at a distance behind Mr. Herman here, there's a colorful map. It's a complex mosaic of ownership up there. So we printed a smaller version for you to, you know, reference, hopefully not over your bedtime reading tonight, but at some other point in time, to really demonstrate that there's not one single entity that's responsible for the Upper Post, but many entities that are up there. Oftentimes when the Upper Post is talked about, people get confused between, you know, the ownership of the DNR, the ownership of the Veterans Administration, the National Historic Society, and others. And so this map that's being passed around has a legend that really outlines the ownership and who's responsible for managing those buildings. We also have Boy Scout Base Camp and their headquarters up there. They're doing some work right now as well. And we just think that, you know, Dominium is just a very wonderful and solid organization that has demonstrated a real unique ability in our community to take old historical buildings, renovate and reuse them, maintain their authenticity, but repurpose them for, you know, valuable use in the community. We envision, you know, seeing an affordable housing community up there that does give preference to veterans, and we've heard some very moving testimony today. And would like to thank the veterans that, you know, were here today and spoke. And so we would like to, you know, resurrect the Upper Post. You know, it's within the statutory boundaries of Fort Snelling State Park, which is a gateway park for the Department of Natural Resources. There's an opportunity for folks that live in the metro, Minneapolis and St. Paul, to use Fort Snelling as a stepping stone to the outdoors. There aren't a great deal of opportunities to engage in natural resources immediately in the Leavenworth County metro area, but this would be a really unique area that would, you know, couple affordable housing with this great state park right at the confluence of the Mississippi and the Minnesota rivers. And so I just wanted to stress again and reiterate that the DNR very much supports the proposal that Dominium has put forward. We've been trying to work cooperatively with them to get this project done. And as a state, our hope is that, you know, collaboratively we can find some unique ways to really come up with the appropriate funding to get this project going. So thank you again. And I'll pass that off to John Herman. John, if you want to say anything.
And before that, maybe Mr. Parker, we mentioned something about veterans' preferences. Could you maybe share that with the committee?
Sure. One of the ownerships up there is the Veterans Administration, and they've worked recently here over the past several years with Common Bond. They're a very sound nonprofit here in the state, and they developed a couple of these buildings into housing for veterans. And, you know, this would be affordable housing. It's not, you know, Section 8 where, you know, a voucher is issued. It's Section 42, which is affordable housing. So a small family of three or four, you know, that's, you know, middle class and working really hard but finding a difficult time finding affordable housing could actually, you know, be eligible for this housing. But the preference would be, you know, given to veterans because, as we know, many of our veterans, they come back from service, and the first thing they need is a good job, good housing, and it's difficult to find both. And so, you know, this would be an area where veterans could find a safe haven, very comfortable, modern housing that would be affordable to them, and we think that that's extremely important.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker.
Well, we have Mr. Herman.
Would you state your name for the record?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is John Herman. I think on your agenda it says I'm representing Dominion, but I'm actually working with the DNR and have been working with them on positioning the property for redevelopment for about a year and a half to 2 years. We've accomplished some incredible advances between the time of our 2015 RFP, where we selected Dominion, and the present. We have completely restructured the program that the property was given to the state of Minnesota under, from a park use only to a use that allows what in the federal parlance is called income-producing activities to allow us to do a public-private partnership. We also were able to resolve using models from several similar projects in other parts of the country, like Fort Vancouver out in Washington, the issue of subordination and non-disturbance that's allowed Dominion to bring to the project the interest of some of the biggest historic and low-income tax credit investors who would join in doing the project. And the legislature's taken two actions in recent years, one actually last year, to make the project more feasible. First, they allowed us to lease the property for 99 years for real estate redevelopment. And second, last year they allowed us to defease the state GO bonds, which were used to do emergency repairs on some of the buildings. So we have a real opportunity here, as Mr. Parker said, to go forward with a public-private partnership. The combination of the historic credits and the LIHTC credits, just to keep it fairly high level, brings to the project round numbers a little bit more than $75 million out of a total development cost of around $100 million. The balance can be done with a normal mortgage, and Dominion's, as they have said, committed to do, number one, veterans preference, which is a permitted category under the National Housing Act, and second, to commit to doing a much longer-term low-income project than what is called for typically in these program guidelines, which are where it's 15 years. They propose 25 years. The department has worked with them all along. We think they are the best proposal. We picked them after this extensive RFP process, and we hope that the legislature will look hard at the various opportunities to allocate some form of these qualified housing or other types of tax-exempt bonds to allow the project to proceed. And we're happy to continue to work with Representative Detmer, who's done good service in bringing this to a good place for it to start, because this is a really unique place. Every single action having anything to do with the military and the history of our state is intertwined with Fort Snelling, beginning with its construction back in the early 1800s, through the Dakota Wars, the Civil War, Spanish-American War, both of the World Wars, nothing more incredible than even in the 40s in the Second World War, the Japanese code-breaking program that was housed at Fort Snelling. So we can tell an amazing story here. It's a national landmark. We have a contractual obligation as a state to maintain it. And finding a way to bring in a public-private partnership to make that happen could save the state tens of millions of general fund dollars over the next couple of decades. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Herman. Chair Detmer.
Yeah, and we have a couple more speakers, testifiers here. We have Adam Dunick.
Welcome to the committee. We'll just get your name for the record, please.
Yeah, Adam Dunnett couldn't be here today. My name is Andy Snope. I'm next on the list. His kids are home because of a snow day, and he's jumping on a plane to D.C. today, so he's very busy. Good afternoon, Chair Rosenthal, Chair Detmer. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Andy Snope. Like I said, I am the legislative director for the IBW Minnesota State Council. I'm speaking on behalf of the 16 IBW local unions and 16,000 IBW members in the electrical industry in the state of Minnesota. Today I'm also speaking on behalf of the 70,000 members of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades. We're happy to support House File 4362, the bill to support Fort Snelling National Landmark redevelopment. As you know, as was said before, this project has broad support from our state's U.S. members of Congress, Governor Dayton, other state and local partners, the Minnesota Historical Society, and also the members of the Minnesota Building and Construction Trades. Not only will this project provide construction jobs for our members, many of our members who are veterans, but our members will also take great pride in being part of the project to restore this national historic landmark and provide new, safe, quality, affordable housing options for veterans and their families. This proposal will create hundreds of building trades jobs to assist in the refurbishing and rebuilding of these historic facilities, jobs for all crafts related to building and construction, electricians, pipe fitters, boilermakers, carpenters, laborers, equipment operators, sheet metal workers, painters, iron workers, plasterers. I think that's about all of them. Thank you for hearing my testimony in support of 4362. I hope you can support it as well. Thank you, Chair Rosenthal.
And just, Chair Devon.
And just a reminder for the committee, you know, all these trades work with our military men and women that are coming off from active duty or coming out of the reserve components in terms of the helmets to hard hats programs. And this is something that I know I've talked to some of the trades, and they just feel that's a good thing for those veterans that are now in our trades. So.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes.
Thank you.
And next on the list we have Jen Hasmeyer, Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management, MMB. Welcome to the committee. Could you state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee and Representative Detmer. For the record, my name is Jennifer Hasmer. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Debt Management at Minnesota Management and Budget. My unit is responsible for administering the tax-exempt bonding allocation program under Chapter 474A. I would like to highlight a couple technical concerns with House File 4362. But before getting into these details, I would like to say that MMB has been at the table with Dominium, DNR, and MHFA multiple times over the last year as the parties worked on a solution to preserve this important state asset. MMB has been and will continue to be willing to work through the various technical issues with this legislation. Dedicating a portion of MHFA's entitlement balance is not necessarily the only way to finance the Fort Snelling project. The tax-exempt bonding allocation program has other pools of resources that could be tapped, such as the small issue pool. The small issue pool has historically been underutilized, and this was another potential solution the parties had discussed last session. Turning to some of the technical issues in House File 4362, the legislation mentions the commissioner in several places. Under Chapter 474A, that means the commissioner of MMB. However, some of the responsibilities that would be placed on MMB are not currently allowed under statute. For example, MMB has no specific authority to issue bonds for residential rental housing projects or to use tax-exempt bonding allocations for other purposes. We would not be in the best position to help implement this legislation if it was passed as currently written. But I'll reiterate that MMB is willing to continue working with the author, members, and the various parties to find a solution and to make sure that any technical issues are addressed in order to preserve the upper post. Thank you for your time today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the Assistant Commissioner. I see a little disconnect here right now because it looks to me like the members of Congress are on board.
the governor, and I'll quote, I believe it would be a tragic to miss this opportunity to provide approximately 180 affordable housing units to the preference for veterans and their families. Please act affirmatively to save the state's only designated, to save our state's only designated national treasure. Seems like you got a little work to do. Doesn't sound like you're on board here.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, MMB is on board and supports the project. Commissioner Franz did write a letter of support in the, for the project last year. The overall 474A program is a much broader program than just the MHFA entitlement piece.
Well, Mr. Chair, I find it a bit odd, Assistant Commissioner, that we're at this point where we've got all this support from everybody and you're not on board on how to do it. You're saying, well, maybe we should do it this way, this way. I can't believe we haven't got this merged together. This is a very important project. And yet you're saying, even though I've got all the support here, that it's you don't support it the way the governor does.
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I believe that's just a misunderstanding then, because I'm not here to communicate anything other than support for the redevelopment of the Upper Post.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and to the Assistant Commissioner, you're saying do it a different way. The way the chairman has it in his bill is the way it looks to me like the governor supporting, members of Congress supporting, the Hennepin County Board supporting, everybody supporting. I'd say we kind of need to get our act together a little bit here. Just a thought.
And Mr. Chair and
Chair Dave,
and Chair David,
Chair.
I just received this information. I think you quoted right from there.
Mm-hmm.
I just received this myself this today, and so I hope that hope we're on the same sheet of music here, so to speak. So,
any other questions, members? Assistant Commissioner?
And Mr. Chair, and I'll be willing to sit down with the group and take a look at the current statute, the current law, and see what needs to be done to move it forward.
Chair Detmer, I have no doubt that you will figure this out and it will move forward as it should. Next on the agenda is Ryan Balmtrog, Assistant Commissioner, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Welcome to the committee. Could
Thank you
state your name for the record, please?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Detmer, I'm Ryan Balmtrog. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Housing Policy at Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about this bill. Before I talk about some of the concerns we do have about the bill, I did want to spend just 2 minutes to talk about Minnesota Housing's commitment to building and financing housing for veterans. Over the past several years, we've financed, been a part of three separate deals, one in St. Cloud, one at VA Fort Snelling, and then one also in Minneapolis, Vets East. All in total, that's about 200 units of new construction housing that has veterans preference. So this is something we care about and have been a part of in the past. All totaled, those deals were 200 units and roughly $25 million of the same resource that's contemplated in this bill, which is what leads to primarily the agency's main concern with the legislation that's in front of us in this project specifically. Over the past year, as Jen Hassimer mentioned, and also Olin Metz mentioned as well, this proposal has been in front of Minnesota Housing's board three separate times. First to hear an overview about it, and then a second time to get additional information, and then a third time in August to go through the specific proposal and request that Dominion had to waive some Minnesota housing policy around the bill. So the board heard much of the conversation today and actually heard a little bit more. Myself, the commissioner, and several board members went out to the site to look at the property. It is quite the preservation. Properties out there and very worthy of preservation. But as our board went through all the information and heard about the proposal, it ended up to be too much of an opportunity cost for our board to allocate $58 million, which is about 40% of our annual allocation to one project. And part of the reason why it's such a large amount of money is because of the high costs at nearly $600,000 per unit. Our board really struggled and ultimately unanimously said no to the proposal due to the high costs of the project.
Thank you. Representative Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To assist Commissioner Baumtag, now I'm really confused. An agency, the governor, is saying don't do it and has voted as such, but yet we are presenting the committee here from a lot of sources I've always had a lot of respect for and a whole lot of sway with me, such as Congress, the Hennepin County Board, and the governor himself. Now I've really got a disconnect here because the Housing Finance Agency has voted not to do what the governor is saying you should do. So that's a good Thanksgiving dinner conversation, Mr. Chairman. I mean, the governor's saying do it, and you're saying, no, governor, we're part of your administration, but we're not doing it. I mean, just could you explain how that works?
I can, Mr.
Assistant Commissioner.
Yeah, Chair. Representative Davids, I knew your question leading up to me coming down would, and my testimony would lead to further confusion on the issue. I think one thing that's important to note is Minnesota Housing is a little bit different than other state agencies, is that our power is vested in an independent board as set up in statute. And so while the governor sent the letter and Congress asked that our board give, I believe they said, full and faith consideration to the proposal, they did so, but ultimately unanimously said no to the proposal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just find this fascinating, as I always do, Veterans Committee, but this is interesting.
Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how is your agency funded?
Was funded. Oh, sorry.
Well taken.
Chair, Representative, we are a housing finance agency, and under federal law, we are able to earn some spread on the bonds that we issue. So state appropriations that we receive from this legislature or housing infrastructure bonds, those all go into programs, and we are self-financed through our financing authority.
So cut to the quick, you do operate on state appropriations from state bonding appropriations from those bonds?
Assistant Commissioner.
Chair, Representative. A portion, so we receive an entitlement authority, as Assistant Commissioner Hatchner mentioned. Those are used for rental projects as well as home ownership. And, yes, as we are able to use that resource for home ownership, that is a part of how our agency is financed and how we were set up and created over 40 years ago, in part to issue these bonds on behalf of home ownership needs across the state.
Just a quick, what portion does that state element make up of your total budget?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not aware of that number, but I can get that for you.
I would certainly like to know, what element is driven from state funding.
Certainly. And Chair and Representative, again, what I want to reiterate is our commitment to this issue, that we have financed more units than this one project contemplates using half of the resource that this is requiring. So I just want to be clear about our support, and we know that the needs of veterans and far too many families' needs for affordable housing are significant, and that's why we look to utilize this resource to fund over 500 units we could fund with $58 million in bonds as opposed to 176.
Thank you, Commissioner. Assistant Commissioner. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's probably a good idea, considering the number of proposals for dedicated funding we see floating around the legislature, that this is what happens when we dedicate funding. And I'm not saying anything necessarily about the testifier's position, but it's not too long ago, in fact, within the last 2 years, that it was transportation that was having tons of trouble, and wide-eyed legislators sat around a table trying to figure out why transportation was not When we said jump, the response was not how high because of the funding mechanism. So I just think it's a teachable moment, Mr. Chair, to talk to members about the dangers of dedicated funding or funding that's not attached to direct appropriations from whatever it's we do.
Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Please come down and state your name for the record.
I think this is the most testifiers I have in any bill.
Welcome.
Chair, my name is Larry Peterson. I'm a resident of Maplewood, Minnesota. I'm a retired individual. I spent most of my career with the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. My last posting was as manager of Fort Snelling State Park. I was also the Upper Post Project Manager at that time. I've been retired about a year from that role. My role in this usually is comedy relief, so I'm going to keep this really, really brief for you. I've been involved with this Upper Post area since about 1999 when I was a civil engineer working for the Minneapolis Park Board. I worked on the redevelopment of the athletic fields out there. And this is an area that kind of once it gets under your skin, you just can't let it go. And people would ask me in my civil engineering career, why do you keep jousting at this almost impossible project? And the answer is, it would be way cool if we got this done. So what I'm here as a private citizen, I'm here to encourage you to do what you can to cut through the bureaucracy here. I was involved with two different RFPs and umpteen proposals. I've given hundreds of tours out in the area. I've given tours to mushroom farmers. I've given tours to drag strip developers. I've given tours to Irish clog dancers who wanted a free space. You name it. And the proposal that's in front of the state right now is the best the state's probably ever going to get. It reuses all 26 buildings, and the funding comes from a variety of federal sources and tax credits. It's not geobonding from the state of Minnesota, and it doesn't get a lot better. And this is from a reputable developer who has done many projects like this, and it's almost there. All it needs is housing revenue bonds to make this fly. So I would very much encourage you to support whatever it takes to get housing revenue bonds allocated to this project, and I'd love to see people living out there in a couple of years. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Do you want to state your name for the record, please?
My name is John Antonson. I am the superintendent of the Mississippi National River and Recreation Area. That is one of the 418 units of the National Park System. We're a 72-mile corridor that runs through the Twin Cities area. But we are not a Twin Cities park. We are a national park. We are part of all of Minnesota. We're the only national park whose focus is the Mississippi River. We are like park rangers in Yellowstone or Gettysburg or the National Mall in Washington, D.C. We are charged with protecting some of America's greatest treasures. And Fort Snelling is one of those treasures here. And I'm not here to testify for any one bill or any one organization or company. I'm here to say something about the national, local, and state significance of Fort Snelling. And I'll try to do it in just a couple of minutes. There's no historic site in Minnesota that connects us all to one place as a state. During World War II, my father left Benson, Minnesota to go to Fort Snelling. From there, he went to Bombardier School and then to the European Theater, where he was a bombardier and a B-24. Like him, men and women came from throughout Minnesota to Fort Snelling, as we heard earlier today, and then off to somewhere, and many didn't come back. There are veterans parks or veterans memorials in almost every community in Minnesota, I would bet. And I would bet the veterans that they are tributes to went through Fort Snelling. There are a few such places that connect us all and that have done so for such a long time. So it's not just about money. It's about the meaning of place. Fort Snelling ties Minnesotans to our national narrative, our national story, and the stories include American Indian story in Minnesota. Buffalo soldiers who were part of the San Juan Hill charge of Teddy Roosevelt. There are a number of national park units dedicated to the internment camps as a result of World War II. But this, as you heard, we get a story of Japanese Americans who learned how to be code breakers and interrogators and go off into the Pacific Theater and made a tremendous contribution in the Pacific Theater. For these reasons and many more, Minnesota was, or Fort Snelling was Minnesota's first National Historic Landmark. And there, and landmarks are not just historic sites like National Register sites. They are sites that are important to someone in New York or Washington, D.C., as they are to Minnesota, because they are about the American story. In 1971, the United States government transferred Fort Snelling to the state of Minnesota, and the state promised to protect the historic character. For many years, the state ignored that responsibility. But that has changed under the last two administrations. And when the state accepted Fort Snelling, there was a covenant attached to the deed. And that deed said the National Park Service got to oversee how that land was used and the preservation of it. And it's another reason I'm here, because my park oversees that utilization. Over the past 8 years, the Department of Natural Resources and a coalition of many, many individuals has really worked hard to save this place, and I think we're really, really close. Last year, the National Trust for Historic Preservation declared it Minnesota's only national treasure. So it has another level of elevation. My fear is that if we don't do something, we will lose this place. I spent 4 months in Philadelphia working for our Northeast region, and I got to walk by Independence Hall, Carpenter's Hall, where the first Constitutional Congress was, and the Liberty Bell. And I just touched those places. I touched those buildings because it connected me to the past. And that's what we lose, is that connection of being able to see and know the history of these places if we lose these buildings. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Infantson. Anybody else like to testify for the bill or against it? Discussion members? Chair Detmer, any closing remarks?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I set a record number of testifiers in any bill that I carried. And just a reminder, in your packet, it talks about the compelling reasons to support the proposed. And we're talking about 26 buildings, 176 units of affordable housing, 355 bedrooms, 500-plus people that we're talking about in these housing. Broad support from the governor, also from Congress, members of Congress, Commissioner Shelato. There's no cost to the state that will actually save money and add revenue. And $58 million of bonds will lever over $80 million of tax credits. And residents will save over $1 million annual rent. And we can go on and on. This is a project that I've learned a lot about in just the last few weeks. And but as I mentioned before, I look back in the years, my years in the service, I actually took classes in some of those buildings. And it's the treasure that we have here in Minnesota. I hope that we can take care of that treasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I share your sentiments. Chair Detmer renews his motion that House File 4362 be re-referred back to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Okay, members, the last item on the agenda is a review of approval of the House Veterans Affairs Division report. And the report is to leadership list the bills we've heard in the Veterans Group and gave a presentation to the Veterans Affairs Division. Does everybody have a copy of it? And members, this is the work that we've done as a committee. And are there any questions? Again, this is a draft, and we'll be putting together a final report when the session is completed, And when many of these bills that have found their way into the omnibus bills of different committees, and then we'll put together a final one, and we'll make sure that everybody gets a copy of that. Is there any discussion? So the chair moves adoption of the House Veterans Affairs Division Report. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is approved. The report is adopted. Last year, we talked about the possible tour ideas during the interim, but we're unable to do so due to the legislature funding issue. We will plan this interim. We're going to be planning on doing a couple tours during the interim, and I'd like to take you out to the veterans camp that we provided some help and some funding through legacy funds. Also, Camp Legionville is another one that we'd like to get the committee out there to see. And my staff will, the committee will make sure that we get that information out to you. And are there any? And if there's any other ideas that we should be making a tour through, in fact, maybe the tour through the Fort Snelling northern area that we just talked about, maybe that's something we should also tour also. So we'll put that on our list, John. And any other ideas? And since this is our last regular scheduled meeting, I'd like to offer each committee member an opportunity to share your thoughts or comments about what we've done here. And so just raise your hand if you got some comments you'd like to make about our committee. And then I'll have some closing comments. And first of all, I'd like to talk about what I have here. I think you've noticed this in other committees. Representative Albright's father made these gavels. He brought in 28 gavels, and it was from a farm that was built by a black walnut tree that they used the lumber from the black walnut tree for the beams of the barn. And his father works with wood, and he was here last session, and he saw that the gavels that we had here are kind of weak. So what he did, he took a lot of that black walnut and produced some beautiful gavels here. And so I'm going to treasure that for sure. If you see Representative Albright, make sure you mention that to him. And I know I still have a thank you card to go out to his father. It's really precious. So any remarks about this committee? Yes, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank you for running a very, very well-run committee, a very fair committee, and a committee that is dedicated to serving veterans throughout the state. And I really, really appreciate the work that you've done and that we've done, and look forward to continuing.
Thank you. I really appreciate your leadership. And remember when I mentioned when you come through those doors that first day that we leave our politics, and I hope I've been able to do that. And I think we've been able to work together as a committee like we should. Any other comments? And I want to thank, yes. Dr. Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to say, obviously, there's a lot of freshmen on this committee, and I just want to thank you because I think this is really helpful in informing all of us in ways we can better serve our veterans going forward, no matter what committees we end up on in the future. So thank you.
Well, Representative, you're not a freshman to me anymore, okay? you served on this committee, so anybody else? Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Chair. I'm going to just mention that today I'm going to drop a bill, and it's to include for motor vehicles establishing an air metal special veterans license plates. And it's because I heard from a veteran in my district, and he saw all these other license plates with all the other medals being recognized, and he said, you know, this was something important to him too. It's not something necessarily, I don't know what will happen after it gets dropped, but just as a placeholder maybe for future years, something to look at. And mostly I do it so that he knows that his service and his what he's given this country, we are recognizing every time we meet, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here serving with you.
Well, Representative Pryor, you know that I learned over the years, too, sometimes all you need to do is listen to the veterans and let them know that you care and then take some action, you know, after you've listened to them, and what you've done is right. Thank you. With that, I'd like to also thank Vice Chair Bliss. He's in a, he's got a couple bills up in another another committee, and while taking the gavel when I'm presenting bills, Minority Lead Rosenthal, for your bipartisan approach and for your members for to take action on our committee's work. Committee members, for your dedication for helping veterans through your legislative proposals. I think many of you had some type of legislation that you've carried the last few years, and veterans who have come to our meetings to support our work. I know I see Mr. Kerr up there. I see you at every one of our meetings, and also state government funding, state government finance meetings, and Ben Johnson, you're always there, and Jerry Kaiser, testifying so many times with some of the bills that we've come forward with. And also our staff, Jeff Diebel, thank you. You really haven't had to say too much this last session, but really appreciate coming into my office and we're going through some legislation, sitting down with us and taking a look at how the best way we can approach some of these issues for veterans, and Helen Roberts, for your input many times behind the scenes, things that you do for this committee. I really appreciate that. Mitch Forney, House Page, thank you for being with us. I want to make sure that I don't miss anybody. Ricky Campbell, House Public Information Writer. Paul Patella, House Photographer. And Jim Gilbin, I didn't forget you this time, and appreciate what you do. Brian Cook, for the work that you do, putting out things for our caucus and for this committee. A lot of behind the work does, because a lot of times I get things in emails, and it's 11 o'clock at night. And I know that people are burning the night hours and doing some of the work for these committees and all the committees. And Justin, you know, the work that you do coming on to this committee, and having to put up with me sometimes, but he is a wrestler, so he knows what the hard work that this committee requires. And then also, I would say my right hand man here, John Holquist, the committee administrator. You have done so much. You know, this whole idea of putting together this report, it's not my idea. I approved it. But John came forward to me and says, we need to include all the members of this committee and the staff that works in this committee. I don't know if other committees do that. I haven't seen any other committee do this. And I'll be presenting this the final draft. I'll be presenting to the speaker and the majority leader, and to let them know what this committee does for our veterans in our state. And is there anything else? I hope I didn't miss anybody. And but as I always been saying that, you know, thank you again. And going forward, remember that every day is a Veterans Day, and we